All right, so the next instalment in Senses of the Soul. A quick recap if you'd like to know more. Obviously, go and listen to those segments on the website, because each one's about half an hour of explanation. I will touch on where we've been so far to just bring us into where we're up to. So ideally you'll still have your crystal card.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's fine if you have the others, but we just took the opportunity to collect some. Okay. All right, we'll use them after. Thank you. All right. So the senses of the soul. So just to help bring in those that are new today, as to where we are in the topic. We all are familiar with our physical senses, yeah? Of touch and smell and sight and hearing. You know, these are all senses that we're familiar with in how we experience the physical world, yeah? If we understand the purpose for, you know, being here, I guess, as a possibility, is that, you know, we are this aspect of divine, have an experience so it can experience itself and know and grow itself in some way, yeah? If we take this as a premise, then the senses are the gateway through which this occurs. Because if you consider your physical vehicle, so here you are in your matter, in your physicality, the physical vehicle experiences the construct through the senses. You know, everything that you are processing is because of your senses, because of what you see, what you touch, what you hear, what you taste, what you feel. These are all the impressions, how you experience the energy of the construct that we're in. And you can imagine that through these senses, you're bringing the information into your being. It then is sorted in consciousness through what they call the border senses. So 5 physical senses, 3 border senses. So in a physicality, the border senses would be things like the aspect of the mind, the aspect of the emotion, and the aspect of the feelings, which are different to the emotions, much more like instincts, yeah? So you've got this instinctual knowings, the mind knowings, the emotion, the heart knowings. These are kind of 3 types of intelligences through which this information is filtered so that we make sense of it, so that we make meaning of it, in fact, yeah? And it's kind of that, then, information is what's kind of like passed to the divine, if you like. It's kind of like the mechanism of taking this construct and giving it to the divine so that it can learn and benefit from our experience. But, of course, it's not a one-way street. The divine also wants to send it back down so that we are able to play as the divine in this construct. And this is where in this gateway between our divinity and our physicality, we have this thing called soul. Soul in its essence is memory. But more than just memory, because of course when you think of going, okay, if I connect to like a past life, I'm connecting to a previous incarnation of my soul, yes? What you connect to is you connect to the memories of that time, yeah? But it's not like continue, you don't have like a movie that just plays everything. What you'll get is you'll get the charged memories, so the ones that have a combination of the experience, the emotion. So emotion, you know, when you think of emotion, think of power. Emotion is energy. So you have the knowledge, the information of the experience. You have the power of the emotion that codes it. And that's what makes it more memorable or not in some ways, because it's got more energy. And then the third vector is meaning. So of the experience, of the emotion, then there's the meaning, so the story you told yourself about it, in fact. Yep, that's what unifies it into a thing, almost, like basically a trinity of consciousness that gets tucked into the soul memory, yeah? It has those 3 aspects to it. And so, in essence, your soul is memory. Why? How does this serve the divine knowing and growing itself? Well, if the divine just simply had a physical experience, learnt that, and then it's sent back again. And then the next incarnation, you know, new part of divine, learns that and goes back. In that scenario, there's no evolution because there's no capacity to learn and build on and increase the complexity of the soul and therefore evolve the soul and become, you know, shift your dimensional perceptions and all of these kind of things. It's because we have soul that we can do that, because soul becomes the repository of the memory of the life that you've experienced, yeah? And then you get to build on that in your next incarnation. Of course, incarnations are not necessarily linear in time, because the soul actually, the essence of soul energy is outside of time. It's actually between the threshold of the divine and the world of matter, which is governed by space and time because it needs measurement. So you have this threshold of soul energy, which is called different things by different traditions. You know, sometimes, you know, this is the soul, the collective soul, the oversoul, this kind of thing. Some call it race mind of the species. Some refer to it as the space. It sits at the top of the Akashic records because this is the collective memory of things that happened upon, you know, the planet. It's termed different things, but we all have a general feeling for it. So in coming back to have an experience, the divine aspect, the divine spark, the divine itself in its ability to have experience in this construct, it's like a fractal of being. You know, every divine spark, while it is of the divine, it also has a particular element characteristic, which is kind of like the essence of your soul in some ways, that comes in, that collects the energy of what we would characterize as your dominant soul, so the bit that you've built so far. What happens, which we talked a lot more about in the last one, because last circle we did a lot about structure of the soul. So if you'd like to know more about this, really good one to listen to. The structure of the soul, that when you come in, the other purpose, of course, for soul growth is not just the experience of your life, but needing to unify the memories of the various souls so that we can actually get a more complex, more developed soul. Yeah. To that extent, this was left over from last time. I left it there just because we'll refer to it. But the dominant soul, when it incarnates, it's not all of your soul that incarnates. It's probably only around 60%, because you actually share out bits of your soul to, particularly to your soul family, which are part of your, like, your monad group of soul, and depending on development it goes out further. But you bring in characteristics of other soul bits, particularly from your monad group, which are both a combination of masculine and feminine energies, little components. You also have this thing called the incomplete soul, which is a bit that keeps you growing and seeking, and your life is actually integrating those aspects in order to weave a bigger, more complex soul experience. And so also then in this way we build the collective soul or the collective consciousness. There's lots more about it. I'm not going to go into it today because it was at least a half hour explanation just last time, because I want to move a bit further. But it's mostly to understand these, you have up to like 12 of these other bits of soul with you, and they live within the organs of your body. So the consciousness that sits in your liver, the consciousness that sits in your lungs, the consciousness that sits in your kidneys, you know, these are actually other soul parts that you have brought with you for the journey in order, again, to help to continue your experience to grow and know itself, but also to unify the construct, because the divine not only wants to grow and know itself, but it's trying to collect all of that information into a oneness, yeah, into a structure of oneness by integrating it, by webbing it in many ways, in order to create a greater complexity of information. This is how it grows itself. If it doesn't put it together, it's just a bunch of little parts. Yeah. If it wants to be a collective whole, there have to be interweavings of integration and connection. And this is how the soul mechanism helps to achieve that. It also can work in the opposite direction. You can come in with this lovely group of souls and you can have traumatic experiences where, in essence, instead of unifying all the parts of you together, you end up, you know, rejecting and separating parts of it, and this leads to the condition known as soul separation. And there's a lot of shamanic work that is done on helping to piece things back together that were separated off, because we don't want to face those bits. We've rejected them, and those bits have. And in the end, then when we go back, you know, we may have come in with a nice big soul part, and we might end up going back with a smaller soul part with lots of bits that are not part of it, unified anymore. And indeed, as a species on this planet, we have been in a condition of soul separation for at least 15,000 years. And we have been diminishing our soul parts rather than evolving them. And so we have been dropping in consciousness rather than evolving our consciousness. There were conditions that help this to occur. However, we're in a time of shift and change where we have this opportunity to shift it back the other way and again to start rebuilding the soul parts and developing our consciousness. And absolutely, this is what the Age of Aquarius is about, is again unifying everything, bringing it back together and embracing our freedom and creating a different condition where we are back on the path of evolution instead of on a very treacherous, slippery slope of de-evolution. May we have been. Okay. The soul, in order to be a container, if it's going to be a container of your memories and your emotions and your experiences, anything in the field, if it's going to contain something, then it needs to be built of elemental energy. Because whether it's physical or even non-physical, it has to have a matrix of energy in order to hold something inside it. You have to have a container for something. So in terms of the soul, it has, just as in the physical, it has, it has elemental energies to contain it. It's very interesting. I find it very interesting that when I look at my hands, I see five fingers. Hopefully you do too. Mm-hmm. And this is because this five system of energies relates to our elemental nature, yeah, of earth, air, fire, water, and ether, yeah. And that we have this matrix, which is really what they call the pentagramic energy system of the body, which runs on these elemental frequencies, yeah, as opposed to the chakras, which run on earth frequencies, because they are to do with the physicality. So a different system. These are all layers of systems. In terms of the soul energies, you know, you could match them if you wanted to your frequencies of your finger. So like your pointer is like the energy of fire. So it's like if I, you know, if someone points at you, often you can feel it like a, you know, it's like it's got a good little punch. It's got this energy that is like fire. This lovely tall one in the middle is like the energy that is of water. It's very feminine. This is kind of receptive. It's kind of like it shows us that the furthest reach is our receptive nature, our instinctive nature, our ability to feel out further than our physicality is our receptive instinctual center, and so we run that. This one here is like a yellow frequency that runs on air and has this connectivity of air that comes to it, and this little pinky one is actually your most potent finger, because the law in esoterics is always the power is in small. Because small things, the power is compressed. Big things, the power is dispersed. Little green pinky has the energy of creation, the green energy that is earth energy, that allows everything to grow, the green finger. And they all relate to the senses. And the thumb is your white, and it's like the ether. It can touch everything. Ether is the ability to connect all the parts together. Yeah. So that it can, all parts can connect in. In relation to soul energy, so that's kind of like the physical end of it. In the soul energies, again, you have the similar matrix. As we've journeyed through so far, we looked at, the first one we looked at was the divine. The divine is like ether. It's where it has all of the energies together. The six-pointed star is simply all of the elements laid on top of each other. That's when you lay all those element signs on top of each other, you get the six-pointed star. That's what it is. The six-pointed star, it speaks of union. This is the union of the elements. Yeah, the masculine and feminine in balance is unity. So this is what that brings. We looked at sense of desire. Desire was, again, like the fire energy. Desire was where we could actually launch our, like our soul contract, our soul essence, the ability to create and attract the essence of our soul journey. Yeah, so in a nutshell, that's kind of what that was. Dream was the water element of soul. So dream was the feminine receptive. So desire was much more masculine transmissive. The dream was the ability to bring in soul information, to be able to be the container, to be able to hold that information from the soul. The air element was that we did last time was memory. So that, you know, it has this mental aspect. It's the story, the meaning, the construct that we have brought to create the soul memory. And today we look at now the last aspect of the five features, which is the earth aspect of the soul, which we call exchange. And that's the topic for today. All right, so that's in a very brief nutshell, a summary of the last 5 months. All right, here we go today with sense of exchange. Sense of exchange, I think it's probably in some ways, to me, the easiest one to grasp because we experience it so much. The statement about, you know, what is the sense of exchange, if I had to say, okay, what's it in a nutshell? It's the glue. It's the bit that sticks everything together. The sense of exchange is like the... So if we go back to the story of when we're incarnated, okay, we have our dominant soul bit, and then we've got all these other little bits of soul which express like personalities of our being. The ability to integrate them and knit them together comes because of this sense of exchange. So in brief, to try and explain it, is like having... Draw me. It's like when you have an exchange. Well, we have two things. So Sarita and me, here we are. We are two beings. We are two little fields of consciousness. Yeah. So when we decide to get together and play together, we overlap our fields and we become like the Vesica Pisces. Yeah. Where we are still ourselves, but we have this bit in the middle that plays together, that exchanges in many ways, yeah? So we come into an exchange. Out of that exchange forms something that is neither me nor is it Sarita, but is something new that is a combination of both of us, and therefore it has greater complexity of being because it's got all of me and all of Sarita in terms of the essence. But in the mix, it becomes something that's even bigger than both of us. Yeah? So it becomes in itself a a third thing. Yeah? And this is growth of consciousness, because this is basically how everything works. That, you know, you have a masculine force, you have a feminine force, you bring it together, something's birthed. In an individual, you know, there is me, there is, you know, a crystal, I have an interplay. Something can occur that is both the energy of that crystal and the energy of me that is more and different than both of us. Yeah. And so a third thing can be created in this way. This is why consciousness is always this trinity kind of thing. There's always the polarity of exchange, yeah? And out of the polarity of exchange, something is birthed, something is created and becomes what they call the third vector. This essence of exchange is what we're talking about, but we're talking about it at a soul level. We can see that it plays on a physical level, you know, otherwise none of us would be here, because, you know, men and women get together, babies are created. Something that is neither one of them or the other of them is birthed. Yeah, that's sense of exchange at a physical level. Sense of exchange at a soul level, if we remember that soul is basically memory. That so when we are in exchange at a soul level, then we have access or ability to share memory in some ways that we didn't actually experience ourselves. So we actually are in exchange of soul energy in the ability to create something more. Examples of this. Before I go into examples of this, to explain a little bit further, it's also to understand everything has a soul. Yeah? So the crystal has a soul. The plant has a soul. What is soul in relation to everything? Soul, if we understand that soul is memory, then in order for energy to take a form like a crystal, there has to be a memory of that form, so that all selenite grows in the same way. Yeah. So there's a blueprint, a memory for that form. For every form, so there's a memory not only of its form, there is memory of its function. This is why, you know, a selenite will feel different to an amethyst, yeah, because it has a different vibrational function, often related to its form. It also has a meaning, so it has form, it has function, and it has meaning. Another word often used instead of meaning is archetype. It has a meaning which is beyond its form and its function. It's kind of the reason it has been created and is part of our matrix of life, you know, that kind of essence of divine meaning. So again, it has a trinity. Everything has it, from a crystal to a plant to a human. What is different is the complexity of the soul. Yeah, there are very simple structures which have a simple soul essence, and there are more complex structures which have a much more complex soul essence, a much more integrated level. Ideally, humans are one of those. Sometimes we wonder, but, you know. There are other beings on the planet also that have a level of complexity that is so diverse that we are able to bridge from the consciousness of the Earth to the consciousness of the cosmos and indeed to the divine. This is because the complexity of the soul type is so diverse. It has many more of divine aspect growth within it, and also greater frequencies of the cosmos within its soul essence. This gives us ability to be what we call a bridge form, which humans are. Humans are a bridge form. Other things that are bridge forms are elephants, whales and dolphins, the ape family of orangutans and chimpanzees and sea turtles. And have I missed anyone? Who have we got? Whales, dolphins, sea turtles, elephants, and the ape family, basically. Yeah, are the main ones that I know of. These are all beings on this planet, in terms of animals anyway, that have a complexity that is same as ours, in that they can bridge the cosmos. There are also beings within the plant kingdom that can do it, particularly the trees that hold a old age. So trees that are long-lived also have this capacity to be a bridge form, because they have so much complexity of soul because of the length that they live and experience, that they also have this ability to be a bridge form. So when we talk about exchange with the soul, we're not just talking about exchange with one another, but of course, we are also talking about that. But, you know, examples I can bring of this exchange that we can experience is, backtrack to one point I need to put in before there. One of the things that facilitates the exchange of soul energy is actually, you need power, you need emotion. But you need a type of emotion. You need the emotion that is able to bring connection, because it has the frequency of communion. So common union. These are emotions that allow connection. So we would know them, you know, love. We always go, oh yeah, love's the glue. Helps it connect. When you have a love for something, there's always a connection. There are other emotions that can bring that connection. You know, gratitude can bring connection. Things that sit in that frequency, so joy can bring connection. Yeah, so love, joy, gratitude, you know, they're probably your big three. To a certain extent, acceptance and kindness, these also can bring a level of connection, maybe not as powerful as love, gratitude and joy. But this connection that comes through emotion is the fabric that brings it all together. This is why, you know, for every pathway, we're talking about, you know, learning to love and accept all that we are, you know, to love and accept those parts of us that, you know, we're trying to reconcile. Possibly you're trying to reconcile some parts of your personality which truly you have, you know, brought in for this incarnation, are not actually part of your dominant soul, but a part of something, another aspect of you that you're then learning how to integrate. And then, of course, in that integration, your soul becomes more complex. You can understand this exchange. There is a wonderful book called The Secret Life of Plants. If you've never come across it, it's an old book, but it's a fabulous. But it talks about the experience that really led to the development of things like music of the plants. So you might have come across music of the plants where you can, you know, bring a thing to actually allow the plant to sing, yeah? And you can hear its voice, if you want to put it that. This all started back with a very bored lie detector guy in New York, pondering one day about connecting his lie detector machine to the pot plant on his desk. And that's how all that started. And then, you know, he did it and it wasn't doing anything. So he was like, oh, you know, maybe I'll burn one of its leaves and see if it does anything. And he went off to go and see his secretary to borrow her matches, because he didn't have any. And by the time he come back, you know, the machine was going, shoom, 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 shoom. And he's like, wow, I haven't even done anything. It responded to my thought. Yeah. That led him on a huge series of experiments, which you can read about. It's very fascinating. But later on, scientists, you know, obviously became very interested in this phenomenon. There was lots of things that would show that plants had memory and, you know, all of this kind of the ability to span quantum distances of reaction. But what was interesting was that when some of the scientists tried to replicate his data, it didn't always work. So then it came to why. Why does it work for some people and not for others? And the reason in the end that they came to was those that had a connection with the plant, in other words, they loved it, they looked after it, they cared for it, they had a feeling for it, it would communicate with them. And where there was no connection, there was no communication. Now, this basically says it all. where there is a warmth of connection, a want to connect, a willingness, an open-hearted wish to actually be with somebody or someone else, then this forms a bridge of connection. This is the exchange within the quantum matrix. That's what allows the energy to flow. Yeah, is emotion, the caring. Love becomes the glue that allows things to flow. And of course, you know, this works with everything. This works with people. This works with whatever it is. You know, it can work with a star, in fact. You know, you can see a star in the sky and you can be in such a heartfelt wish to connect with it. It's possible to connect in truth to anything that has consciousness. It's all in the end, not only about feeling, but also law of attraction and being able to hold a resonant key for what it is that you're wanting to call in. So sense of exchange. You know, within some experiments that I, again, have seen done, that were done by people within our Demenher group that we're connected with, who work quite a lot with, again, understanding the soul aspects. They had set up, again, where there was strong power of connection. My favourite stories were of this young guy who wanted to fly a helicopter. And so he went and approached this other guy who was the, you know, experienced helicopter pilot, and said that, yes, you know, he really wanted to see if he could quickly transfer the knowledge and skill of being a helicopter pilot. Reminds me of the Matrix movie where, you know, they plug them in and upload it. It reminds me of that. And so they did this whole process together, where in terms of exchange of energy, and they really worked on it consciously, this building of energy and this conscious exchange of this skill. And again, it was an incredible thing of the guy. Look, truly, he'd had hardly any hours of training and he passed his test. And the guy who tested him could not believe that he hadn't actually, you know, really had any experience of flying a helicopter. But it was able to transfer the knowledge of it. And they went on, they did lots of other experiments. But again, it's a thing. And we can find examples of it, you know, even in our life, of, you know, being with others that have particular type of skills, and the more that we're with them and connect with them, something of their nature or something of their skill, we're able to integrate it in some ways. So in this way, we're able to add those memories, those soul memories, into our memories, even though we haven't lived them. Yeah. And so this is a way we can share and expand our soul beyond our own experience. So this sense of exchange is the mechanism through which we build collective soul. Yeah? It's how we become collective conscious.
Go. So given that we're part of the collective field of everything. So
yes,
there must be some ability to connect with that field. And I was just thinking about the law of resonance, and like if I'm playing a particular frequency or a tuning fork, how that can make another tuning fork start to. So is that also a way to see the sense of exchange? That, like,
yes,
if we're all vibrating a field of love, if we are in that state and are within, you know, proximity to other people, that can actually help start to produce that frequency within them.
Yes, absolutely.
And that's
the Heart Math Institute data that shows that. That in a field of people, if there are, you know, a couple of people that are in heart coherence, it'll actually change the field.
Is that the same thing?
Is it is. It's sense of exchange that is the mechanics behind it. Because it's to do with the exchange of frequencies. And so there are two aspects to it. Resonance or law of attraction is one. So you've got to have the note. Another aspect is power. The stronger connection comes from stronger power. The strongest power comes from the strongest emotion. So the more there is a strong feeling, the better the connection, always. Another thing to consider within sense of exchange And this actually was really well illustrated back in Celestial Prophecy, in that series which came out yonks ago. But it was very good at illustrating, again, this sense of exchange, because it also helped highlight that, like, you know, here's me and here's the reader. Sense of exchange will work best if we are in sovereignty. So if I am sovereign of my field, so therefore in my field, I am the master of my field. So I take responsibility for my field. I determine what happens within my field, the energy and vibration of my field, and Sarita does the same. Then when we come to share our fields, it's a clean sharing of energy. The different equation, which was talked about in Celestial Prophecy, is when people have attachments. And this is why all of the higher teachings are always about non-attachment, of why you need to have non-attachment if you want to be a sovereign being. Because when our fields are unbalanced and we're attached, it's like, oh my God, you know, Sarita just, you know, she has this quality of grace and beauty that I don't have, and I want that, and I'm going to be her friend because then I'll get that from her, you know. So it's kind of like I become codependent because I need her to see that in me and be that for me, and, you know, and so I have this pull on her field, and basically what I've done is I've attached to her field and I'm sucking off her energy because I want some of what she's got, because I don't think I can manufacture it myself. So this then causes distortion. You can't have a clear sharing of energy when you have this bar of push-pull between fields, where you have a codependency where there is either a robbing, where I'm taking, or where I'm giving myself away, where I'm not good enough, I feel powerless, you know, please take all my energy, I'll give it all to you, that kind of thing. Again, we're either, you know, attachment is, you know, we're either taking it from someone or we're giving ourselves away. And attachments can be to other people, they can also be to places, they can be to events in the past, they can, you know, they can be to all kinds of things where we give away our energy because we can't let go, we're attached to it, we don't, and which is, again, that's why all the teachings are like, we gotta let go, remember, just let go of the past, let go of those people, let go of, you know, all of these kind of things, because we don't let go, we're attached, and when we're attached, the energy is distorted, and when it's distorted, we can't be sovereign, because we're no longer exercising the free will over the completeness of our vibrational consciousness field. It's no longer intact. And in truth, sense of exchange will not work very well in a clean way when there are attachments, because there will be distortion in the push-pull of the field. Certainly, yes, there will be, you'll probably still be able to experience it with other things, but certainly not very well with that person that you have a push-pull with, because you won't be able to overlap your fields in a clean way, the attachment basically will create the distortion. So another aspect of
connection too, doesn't it?
Sorry?
It prevents connection.
It does. That the other things that prevent connection is the polarity of fear consciousness and love consciousness. Fear consciousness keeps us contracted. You know, when we're afraid of being hurt by someone, we're afraid of abandonment, we're afraid of, you know, all of these various things, everything that makes us bring our field in and go, okay, I'm only feeling safe if I'm in here, I don't feel safe opening or connecting with someone else. And this is very common, because again, we've come through a time where we've had a lot of conditioning to keep us in the fear-based programming of the reptilian brain. Of that fear, flight, fight response, because the collective human consciousness has been subjected to quite a lot of trauma through wars and all these kind of things, conditioning, even on our TVs, you know, there's so many things that keep us in fear. You know, you watch the news, you know, hopefully you don't, but, you know, that, you know, and you can experience something there, that can make you feel frightened or upset or angry, and yet it's not real because it's an illusion. You're having an emotion to something that's actually not in your experience.
Would it also be things like movies? And
yes, yeah, of course. Yeah. Yes, totally.
You still get that feeling.
That's right. Yeah. So these things can contract you because fear creates contraction. Love creates expansion. You know, this is the polarity of that matrix. So fear-based consciousness is one that continues to make us separated. When we're afraid of each other, we're like, okay, you know, I stay over here, you stay over there. You know, you can see how things like the mandates and things of COVID, you know, created a lot of separation because people were afraid of each other. It's like, don't come near me or you'll, you know, I might get sick. You know, this kind of fear consciousness was very much magnified. Again, it's a mechanism of separation. When we're separated, we can't do soul exchange. When we can't do soul exchange, we can't come into collective consciousness. We can't come into collective consciousness. We cannot evolve as a species because our species, we are in the time where we must come into collective consciousness. Everyone else is waiting for us. The trees already have collective consciousness. The bees have collective consciousness. Face it, everything on the planet has collective consciousness except the humans. You know, we once had it, but we dropped, yeah? And we lost the ability for the sense of exchange, yeah? We stopped learning how to connect with everything. You know, you go back in time, and particularly with Indigenous tribes and things like that weren't so affected by the programming, they absolutely had sense of exchange. You know, you look at the Indigenous people of Australia, then, you know, they could speak to the tree, they could speak to the land, they could speak to the weather. You know, they could go, okay, we need the rain to come in. And so they could speak to the energies, the elements of water and fire. They could exchange consciousness with them and co-create together, yeah? This is what it looks like. When we have sense of exchange, everything can co-create together and experiences this sense of oneness, this sense of, ah, yeah, we can play together in the matrix, you know. The sense of exchange is fundamental for being able to connect the intelligence of this world of matter that we're in. You know, when you have this, again, there are so many examples. You know, if you ever do... there's a wonderful writing, a book about Paralandra. Paralandra is like a Findhorn community, but it's in America, yeah? And in there, you know, she talks about her whole journey with nature spirits and all the rest of it, and she gets this wonderful connection with this energy that she calls Pan. And, you know, they're talking about, you know, the relationship between energy and matter. And he was trying to say, you know... where we can co-create together, you know, we can just imagine the forms and the forms can appear. And she was like, you know, I don't understand. He says, well, you know, tell me, what do you need? What's your heart's desire? And she said, I need manure for the garden, you know. And in the story, a pile of manure appears in front of her. Now, there are also many other stories like this, you know, stories of where they've, again, worked with nature spirits, which hold a memory of a blueprint, and went, okay, blueprint of apple, and apple forms up in their hand. And if you start searching this phenomenon, there are many, many examples in the world of where there is a alliance between the energetic world and the world of matter. And this is really, you know, for people that have been in our circles before or maybe come to things like our Pulse of Peace meditation, we always work through building alliance through the thing we call the Mother Worlds, because it's actually in the knit of these sentience components of this planet that when everything is in alliance, then the ability to manifest and create and have a world of abundance becomes effortless. Because everything is just co-created and manifested together. Because not out of control, but out of being together in the dance, because we agree and we align and therefore we create together for something that serves, you know, us all, that kind of idea. The engine behind that idea is the sense of exchange, and it comes from a soul level. that flows through us that is able to meet the soul in all things. Because if I want to dance with the crystal, it's not me trying to make the physical crystal dance with me. It's about my soul meeting the soul of the crystal. And it's our soul exchange that allows the dance. Yeah? The same with plants. When you want to connect with a tree, you know, you can rub the tree and pat the tree, but if you can actually find a centering in yourself where you can connect to your soul, which the gateway of the soul is always through heart coherence. When you can come into heart coherence, you can access the soul aspects of yourself. When you can bring heart coherence and be with a tree, then you can actually meet the soul of the tree and have an exchange. Yeah. And the exchange will feel more like emotion than mind, because it comes through the gateway of feeling, because feeling is much more complex. They say, you know, get the feeling first and then allow it to arise into the mind. The mind will then, depending on its consciousness, able to make messages out of it. But the complexity of the energy is actually coded in the emotion. And so when we connect with things, our connection is emotion first. This is the power.
I was just thinking, it's like animal communication is very much like that too. Like they can feel your intention.
Totally.
So if your intention is, oh, I love you, and they can feel it, then you can actually communicate with them.
Totally.
So that's beautiful, just at that. Because I always understood the concept of like having pure intentions and honouring, like, before you step into the forest, but now that makes more sense.
Yes.
Yeah.
And absolutely with animals, because of that same thing. Mm. And all animal communication comes through this aspect of meeting the soul.
Just wanted to offer something, what you were saying before about the mind and fear. So neurophysicists, or whatever they're called, they know now that the brain, when you think about something frightening, that your brain actually doesn't know the difference between that you're just thinking it or you're experiencing it. So your body will have that response to it. So that just in around the heart math stuff, that, you know, this is from my own journey of, like, for a while having the fear thought and then having more thoughts about having that fear thought, and how that was such a prevention, and like that the way to get out of that is by going, I'm not explaining this very well, by going, dropping out of that thought and going into generating the feeling that helps to settle the thought.
Yes.
Like, yeah.
That's right. Because
first,